When is violence an acceptable response in resistance? This is a question I've continued to struggle with, and I know many of you have struggled with this as well. Many of us are familiar with a nonviolent response in resistance, the idea that presenting a calm, collected, well-organized force against an oppressive force will raise consciousness and awareness, which leads to change in that oppressive force. This was the way of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the way of Gandhi, and the way of many religious leaders. However, even Martin Luther King Jr., towards the end of his life, realized the limits of nonviolent resistance, and that in some instances, both nonviolent and violent responses are required. Violence exists around us every day. I'm not just talking about the behavioral acts of violence, such as murder or rape. I'm also talking about the state's legitimate use of violence, such as our police force or our military, or the systematic violence of poverty, racism, or any social system based on oppression. We participate in these forms of violence knowingly and unknowingly. When we call the police, we are legitimizing the use of force they have been granted. For many of us, that means they're protecting us. However, for others, such as a person of color, that force has been used against them. We have seen the abuse of this lately, with many white people calling the cops on people in coffee shops or in stores or just because they're walking down the street. We also participate in systems that promote poverty, which Gandhi deemed the deadliest form of violence. Just by participating as a capitalist consumer, we unknowingly participate in this form of violence. So in struggling with this question of when violence is an acceptable response or not, we have to consider, as Reverend Nato Hollister suggested in our wisdom, what relationships exist in people's lives that already perpetuate a cycle of violence. Another aspect to consider is what is called the just war theory. First proposed by Roman philosopher Cicero, this theory took on many different forms as it went through the minds of St. Augustine, Thomas Aquinas, Hugo Grotius, Thomas Hobbes, and John Locke. And in this book, The Demonic Turn, The Power of Religion to Inspire or Restrain Violence, Lloyd Steffen defines just war theory as follows. Just war theory offers a guideline for resisting evil with possibility of actually using force if the threat to human life and well-being is momentous and all other nonviolent uses fail or can have no further effect. Just war, like nonviolent resistance, is a theory focused on resistance to evil, but where just war differs is that it holds open the door to an actual use of force, and the theory then proceeds to establish the test of moral justification that would, as a matter of last resort, allow a use of force in, say, acts of self-defense or in humanitarian interventions. Nonviolent resistance would hold to the technique of nonviolence past the point a just war advocate would deem responsible and acceptable. This theory is meant to guide a person or a country's response to conflict throughout the whole process, not just at the beginning. The problem is, it's often just considered at the beginning, especially in the use of our military. It's what former President George W. Bush used to justify his response to the events of September 11th, 2001. The important points to remember about just war theory is it allows the use of force in acts of self-defense or humanitarian interventions. It also restrains that the use of force is only to the minimum means necessary to stop the conflict. So it's not like what we did when we joined World War II and dropped nuclear bombs. That was not the minimum force required to stop the conflict. And we weren't in a just war because we didn't choose to jump into it until we were already attacked. If we would have jumped in when humanitarian efforts and all of those other things were happening, we could have said we were in a just war. Finally, It does not permit the use of force against any person or persons who are non-combatants, those or those not involved in the conflict. So any innocent bystanders are not supposed to be harmed. So here's our tools to look at this question. We have just war theory. We have the examples of violence in our world in unknown and known ways. And we have the examination of relationships that people are in which already perpetuate the cycle of violence. So let's look at some historical examples of when violence was a response in resistance. As mentioned in our wisdom, the relationship between the enslaved person and the enslaving person is a relationship already based in violence. The slave is forced into a form of life and labor, which is determined by the slave owner and is based on an oppressive system. So therefore, when John Brown decided to raid Harper's Ferry in 1859 to gain guns and ammunition for a slave revolt, he understood force to be the last resort in a system which perpetuated violence against the slaves and their only means to breaking that cycle. Although his effort failed because he was caught and tried as well as executed for treason, he was financially supported by the Secret Six. Two of those Secret Six were two Unitarian ministers, Theodore Parker and Thomas Wentworth Higginson. In addition, after Brown's capture, he was defended by Ralph Waldo Emerson and Henry David Thoreau. Thoreau, in his essay, A Plea for Captain John Brown, stated, "I think that for once, the Sharps' rifles and revolvers were employed in a righteous cause. The tools were in the hands of one who could use them." Theodore Parker continued to be an active abolitionist and regularly hid people fleeing from slave owners in his basement of his church. He felt the use of force to protect the people from being caught so great that he kept a loaded pistol in his desk where he often wrote his sermons. The Civil War is considered one of the few instances of a just war. It was a war to stop the system of violence that already existed in the form of slavery. Religious historical examples include Moses leading Israelites out of Egypt, parting the Red Sea for the Red Sea only to crash down onto the Egyptian army. Or Jesus going into the temple and throwing over the tables to protest the oppressive system of the economic system between the people, the church, and the empire. So there's plenty of historical examples of the use of violence as a response and resistance. And if you stop to think about it, you could probably come up with some of your own. So what about the use of violence used in resistant efforts today? This is where we might have some blind spots. I know I did, and even Martin Luther King Jr. did. In his speech in 1967, King, after years of promoting nonviolent action, states, "Urban riots must now be recognized as durable social phenomena." He told the assembled crowd of mostly white doctors and academics, "They may be deplored, but they are there and should be understood. Urban riots are a special form of violence. They are not insurrections. The rioters are not seeking to seize territory or to attain control of institutions. They are mainly intended to shock the white community. They are a distorted form of social protest. The looting, which is their principal feature, serves many functions. It enables the most enraged and deprived Negro to take hold of consumer goods with the ease the white man does by using his purse. Often the Negro does not even want what he takes. He just wants the experience of taking." King had determined that he could no longer promote only nonviolent action because he understood, quote, "they could not prosper," meaning the black people could not prosper in a game where they were the only ones expected to play by the rules. Let that sink in. When we look back at the beginning and continued effort of the Black Lives Matter resistance through these perspectives, it allows us to see how violence ended up being a response. Although not all, and in fact a majority of the people, did not resort to violence as a means to protest, for those that did use violence through riots, looting, and other means, violence was what they saw as a last resort to a system that had already killed or threatened many of their lives and had done so for centuries. This question of whether to use violence or not came up again in Charlottesville, North Carolina rally in August of last year. The fascist group Unite the Right showed up to protest the removal of the Confederate statues. One thing to note, a fascist group, their only means is violence. That's what they are showing up to do. They are meaning to be violent to get their way. As a counter-protest to this group, others from all faith traditions and walks of life gathered to deny the Unite the Right group the space to assemble. Many were UUs. In addition to these two groups, between these two groups, there were also an anti-fascist group that showed up ready to use violence to stop the violence of the Unite the Right group, which is exactly what they did. In fact, Cornel West went on television after the event and said, "Those 20 of us who were standing, many of them clergy, standing in front of those fascists, you have the clergy all in a line. You've seen the picture. I've shown the picture right after the event on my minister's message. Those clergy standing in a line, arm in arm, facing those fascists. We would have been crushed like cockroaches if it were not for the anarchists and the anti-fascists who approached. There were over 300 to 350 of them. We just had 20. And we were singing This Little Light of Mine. We could have been completely crushed. And I'll never forget that they saved our lives that day." And if you want to hear more of that, you can look it up. He gets into a lot more than that. This struggle about whether the use of violence is acceptable in resistance ended when I realized one of my dearest colleagues, Reverend Nato Hollister, was a clergy for the anti-fascists during that rally. I shared only a portion of what he wrote after that rally in our wisdom, and here's the passage that made my struggle no longer valid. He writes, "While I do not engage in violent acts in my role as the clergy person, I do acknowledge their unfortunate necessity in stopping greater violence. For those of you who cannot bring yourselves to this position, I feel you. I ask instead that you, at the very least, cultivate a respect for the diversity of tactics that are necessity in all struggles. I ask also that you cultivate a respect for communities, especially marginalized communities, making their own decisions about how to struggle and not get in the way, or worse, collude with the state to bring violence upon them. The oppressed have a moral right to resist their oppressors, and the privileged have a moral responsibility to support that resistance." What I realized after reading this statement was I had fallen into that role of the moderate white liberal that Martin Luther King Jr. claimed to be the biggest threat to the lives of Black people. I kept asking, why can't they just be peaceful? I understand they need to protest, but why use violence? I realized I was asking them to continue to respond to a system which only expected those oppressed to play by the rules. This is when I decided I could no longer wish anybody I saw or at the end of worship peace. I know peace as a form of oppression, and that is going to continue until all know peace. And our principles, we covenant to promote and affirm the inherent worth and dignity of all people, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, a world community based on peace, liberty, and justice for all, and respect for the interdependent web of all existence. Until all of those ideals are reached, I believe it's not within my right to judge or condemn any person's response to being in a system that promotes a cycle of violence in their lives. I also believe that although violence is not yet a method I can use as a response, I understand it's necessary as a last resort. I ask you to just let that, all that information just settle into you. Let it guide you as you encounter these responses. And really sit with the question for yourself. Is violence an acceptable response in resistance? We can also ask How do we prevent violence as a needed response? We need to show up when people ask us, especially people of color. Become allies to those who are oppressed. Lift up their voices and make room for them. Find ways to break the cycle of violence by not participating in the systems of oppression. Use your voice to change the narrative of how violent response is portrayed. How do I know these work? A week after that Charlottesville rally, there was another Unite the Right rally scheduled for Boston Commons. Over 20,000 people showed up to counter protest. They shut that rally down and no violence was needed. None. So if we can show up in mass to counter protest, those anti-fascists and anarchists do not have to put their lives on the line for us as a response to the violence of fascists. We can use our presence as a tool and it doesn't have to get violent. So let us each keep an open mind and an open heart when we consider the actions of others. May we set judgment aside and step into a place of learning more. Amen.